Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Pekudei, Shabbos Chazak, Tavshin Pei Dalet. Okay, so we're left with a few thoughts here to conclude the Truma Tetzava Kisisa V'Yachav Pekudei series that has a lot to do with the Mishkan. And I'd like to start with a pasuk that appears here in Pekudei, but it also appears in Vayakel, when the Torah introduces the artisan, the main artisan of the Mishkan. Incidentally, he was only 13 years old at the time. Uvitzalel ben Uri ben Chur lamati Yehuda. He was Uvitzalel, the son of Uri, the son of Chur. And Rashi says, this is back in Vayakel, when it says ben Chur, the son of Chur, so Rashi says he was the son of Miriam. Now, why do we need to have all of this delineated for us, all of this lineage? It usually would suffice to say Bezalel ben Uri, and now it has to tell me who his grandfather was, and Rashi has to say that the grandfather was the daughter the grandfather was the son of Miriam. Now, let's remember who Chur was, okay? Chur was left behind, along with Aaron HaKohen, to be the two people that if the Klal Yisrael had any questions about taking care of matters when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, you should talk to Aaron and Hur. So now they start to get very antsy, and they see that Moshe Rabbeinu is delaying his return. So they wanted to do something, which they did. They erected a golden calf. Now, Chur tried to protest. He did protest, right? And what happened was they killed him. And then after that, they went to Aaron. Aaron saw, wait a second, that he paid the ultimate price for protesting. So it says, Vayiven Mizbeach, and he built a Mizbeach. And Chazal say the word Vayiven means he built, but it also means he understood. Lahavin means to understand. Mizbeach also means Mizavuach, from the one who was slaughtered. Vayiven Mizbeach. He understood from the fact that Chur was slaughtered that I got to have a different strategy here. And he had this delay tactic, and he asked the men to take the jewelry from the ears of their wives and so on, etc. So the question now is, did Chur did the proper thing, or did he not do the proper thing? In other words, you have these thousands of people, right? You have, you know, you have a whole rebel rousers, if you will. You know, do you stand up and you're the lone voice? And you see this today. You know, when there's riots out there, if you're going to get in the middle, so you better watch out. So he didn't read the temperature correctly, perhaps, and therefore they killed him, and he protested. So Chazal tell us he did the exact correct thing, because the Medrash says, the Medrash Rabban Shmo says, that Hashem said that Chur, he paid the ultimate price. He stood up for the covenant of Hashem, that they should not do anything rash as Avodah Zorah, as building a golden calf. So he was rewarded that his grandson would be the artisan to build the Mishkan. That was his reward. So you see that Hashem considers it the most worthy thing possible for him to have done, and therefore he's rewarded as such. Okay, so that's very good. But the question is, where did he come by this midah, this attribute of standing up for what's right? Now, let's remember what Miriam did. So Miriam is a small child. She really don't know exactly how old she is, but she's very young. This is before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, and her father Amram, he was the leader of the generation. He was a Gadol Hador, and he said as follows: if Paro make a gezerah that any child, any boy who's going to be born will be killed, well, he'll be killed. So therefore, why do we have to have children? So it's for naught. We're going to have children just to have them killed. So he divorced his wife. He divorced Yocheved. And everyone followed suit. This was the Hanhaga, or the Psak, of the Gadol Hador, the leader of the generation, and they all divorced their wives. So his young daughter Miriam, again, she was a small child, she approaches her father. Now, you figure the Gadol HaDor, the undisputed leader of the generation, paskens a shaila, everyone follows, right? And she somehow has the temerity, or she has the strength to approach her father, and she says, Abba, she says, your gezerah, your decree is worse than that of Paro, because Paro only made a decree to kill the Jewish boys. But if you're not going to stay married, and the men are not going to marry women, they're not going to have any children, boys or girls. And so you're going to result in, your actions are going to result in the demise of Klal Yisrael altogether. So he remarried his wife, and everyone else did, and they resumed life. And boys were killed. Moshe Rabbeinu survived with the story of how he was survived and so on and so forth. What gave her the strength and the courage to go ahead and to question her father? I mean, if anybody else would question her father, you would say, how do you argue with the Gadol HaDor? How do you argue with the great leader of the generation? And no one has the ability to do that. But Miriam says, listen, I need to say what I have to say. Let the chips fall where they may. This is the strength of Miriam Hanaviah. She's the one that knew how to do... how to take things in her own hand when necessary. And even though she could have been severely, severely rebuked and admonished and who knows what for challenging her father, not only by her father, maybe other people who have gotten wind of her argument and who knows how they would have treated her. But the point is that she goes ahead and she acts in this way. So this midah of I'm going to do what I have to do and I'm not going to be deterred from what people are going to say, by what people are going to say, that's the meter that she had, that she utilized at that time. And this is, there's a statement where Yisrael Salanter is known for saying the following in Yiddish. He says like this, Medafnisht nochtan, Medafnisht uptan, Medafnisht uftan, Medaftan. Let me explain that Latin to you. Medafnisht uptan means you shouldn't do something just superficially, just to get it done. Okay, I'm just going to get it done. If you do something, you have to do it wholeheartedly. Medafnisht nochtan, don't do something as mimicking someone else. Just don't do something because someone else is doing it. Think it through and know that it's right for you. You don't have to accomplish. Medafnisht uftan, you just have to do. Do what's right. Whether it will hit the mark, that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam will worry about. But that's not our business. In other words, basically, that was what Miriam is telling her father. In other words, Medafnisht uftan, you don't have to, your life doesn't have to, you're not the guarantor of God's vision and His will. You have to do what Hashem wants. Hashem says man should marry a woman and have children. That's our job. What's going to happen with that? That's the Ribbono Shel Olam's job. And oftentimes we don't undertake something because we say my actions are going to matter anyway. You know, like everyone says, well, what am I going to accomplish if I go vote? My one vote's going to make a difference. If you think that you have to make the difference, maybe you're right. But that's not the point. Medaf tun, you have to do. Tun means to do. You have to do what you have to do. And you can't take responsibility for all the accomplishments of what's going to happen because you acted. You just have to do what is right. Do it independently, and do it not superficially. Just do what has to be done. And this is really the message of Betzal ben Uri ben Chor Lamata Yehuda. He was the son of Uri, who was the son of Chor. As Rashi says, Chor's grandson Betzal will be rewarded. Chor will be rewarded by having his son be the artisan. And is, as Rashi says, she's the Benoah, she is the son of, he is the son of Miriam Hanaviah, and that's where he got this midah. Okay, so that's one aspect that I wanted to say. I could speak more about Miriam Hanaviah and other things that she did during her lifetime that also exemplify this wonderful trait, but it gets a little bit away from the Mishkan and this Parsha, and I want to stick more to the Parsha. What I'd like to now talk about a little bit more about the Bitzal Luchor connection. This is back in Vayakal also, but it's again, we treat Vayakal Bakuri in a sense as one long Parsha, because oftentimes it is one Parsha. And in Vayakal, we're talking about more about the Mishkan, and in Parshas, Pekude, we're speaking more about the Big Day Kahuna, but in any event, on the Pasuk where it says, V'yaz Bitzal Sa'aron, Bitzal he made the Aron. Now, the Besha Chochma in that Parsha says that we don't find by the other Kalim that it specifies the Bitzal did that. We know that Bitzal made the Kalim, right? But in terms of the Torah reporting it as such, by Bitzal that said, V'yaz Bitzal es Ha'aron, he made the Aron. It doesn't say specifically he made the Shulchan, he made the Kiyar, he made the Mizbeach Hazav. It doesn't say that Beferish explicitly. He says because other people in history also made other vessels. In other words, you have to know the difference between the Aron, HaKadosh, and all the other vessels. All the other vessels, if anything happened to them, they were duplicated. And they were duplicated by anyone at the time who was responsible for making the articles of the Mishkan. He says, but and this is true of the second Beis HaMikdash as well. When they came back from after the 70-year Golos, so they made Kalim, etc. But the Aron, as we spoke about this, the Gemara Yuma says that something happened where it was hidden away. We don't have the Aron anymore. The Luchas and Aron, they're deep into the cavities of somewhere under the Beis HaMikdash, according to one opinion, right? We don't know. It's hidden away more so than even the tunnels in Gaza, right? Because at least those tunnels are being found and destroyed. At least that's, hopefully that's what's happening. But the Aron, Mishnah Nignas, we don't have it in the second Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, after Bitzal made the Aron in the Midbar, no other Aron was not made. That was the Aron. So therefore, his name is specifically attached to that vessel, Vayasas Aron, because any other vessel is not Ach Varak. In other words, it's not only specifically and emphatically associated with Bitzal, because others could make duplicate Kalim also, not so the Aron. But then he says something else very interesting. He says as follows, you know, we know that the Kruvim, these childlike figures that sat on top of the Aron, so when Klal Yisrael in the Ribbono Shel Olam were in good graces, so they were in a state of embrace. But when Klal Yisrael and Hashem when Klal Yisrael fell out of favor with Hashem, so they faced outwardly. That's what the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra. Now, interestingly, the Gemara says in Yuma that when the Babylonians came into the Beis HaMikdash to destroy the first Beis HaMikdash, so they opened up the Aron HaKodesh. They went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they saw that the two Kruvim, they were in a state of embrace. Now, leave this question aside, and I've spoken about, I think I speak about it every Tisha B'Av, right? In other words, the question is, if the Beis HaMikdash is about to be destroyed, it seems that we fell out of favor with Hashem, so why are they embracing? We're not going to talk about that today. The Rishonim actually asked the question. The Ritva asked the question. But in any event, so they derided the Jewish people and the Babylonians. The Goyim said like this. He says that here you are. You're such a holy nation that whoever you bless is blessed, and whoever you curse is cursed. Right? You're such a holy nation, and in the Holy of Holies, they should be involved in these kinds of things of male female hugging each other and involved in these kinds of activities. We're in the holiest sanctum, in their sanctum of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, they were deriding Klal Yisrael, and they said, in the deepest chambers of the Jewish heart, really, is what's on their mind is really sex. That's what they're really saying. That's what we're all about. And in the Mechilta, it says on the Pasuk in Shmos Mishpatim, Lo Sason Elohei Chesed, you shouldn't make any gods of silver or gods of gold. So it says that if they made the Kruvim not out of gold but out of silver, it would be considered as they're making foreign gods. In other words, yes, we're not allowed to make foreign gods, but the Kruvim were a special mitzvah that they have to be made a certain way and have to be made out of gold, and it occupies a certain special place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But you see that the Kruvim themselves in the Beis HaMikdash, they can come awfully close, right? If they're not made exactly right, if they're made out of silver, not out of gold, and that would be Avodah Zorah. Says the Meshech Chochma, He says the Ribbono Shel Olam was concerned that after the Chet of the Egel, after Klai Yisrael showed at least a fraction of Klai Yisrael, but were all held responsible, since they showed a propensity for worshiping idols, for the sin of the golden calf. So he says that Meshech Chachma says that the Ribbono Shel Olam was concerned that the artisan who might make the kruvim might inject an ever slight machshava, thought of idolatry, might have a thought about, well, whatever avodah zarah means, whatever powers we ascribe to figures made out of gold or silver, and that is what idolatry is, maybe the person who's making these childlike figures, they're figures of little children, right? Everything else in the Mishkan, they were a mizbeach, it was an altar, it was a menorah, right? But these are actually almost, they look like, they're child that look like they have features of people, right? And so therefore Hashem says, wait a second, I can't afford that there should be an ever so slight machshava, some thought that's not 100% kosher in the creation of these kruvim, because maybe it will infuse the kruvim with something less than 100% pristine holiness. And therefore Hashem chose Bezalel. Why Bezalel? Precisely because he was Ben Uri Ben Hur. He was the grandson of Hur. And what was Hur? What was he famous for? He gave his life because he protested the making of the egel, of the golden calf. In other words, so Hur is so far removed from any trace of Avodah Zarah. He protested at the time, and he gave up his life for that. And therefore Hashem says, you know what? This is a person who his grandson, he will be entrusted with making this otherwise perhaps dangerous undertaking of building the kruvim, because a kruvim could carry in their wake some kind of trace, some kind of hint of Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to start to stay clear from anything that might have to do with Avodah Zarah and the creation of the Aron. Therefore, the Meshech Chachma says, that's why the Torah emphasizes Vayas Bezalel as the Aron, that Bezalel, he himself made the Aron, means to say that it was specifically something that was chosen for him to the exclusion of all other Jews. Now, if you want to put this second thought of the Meshech Chachma together with the first thought of the Meshech Chachma, maybe that's why there could be no other Aron made in the history of Klal Yisrael. We started off by saying that the first Aron was hidden away and never was it duplicated. Maybe this is the reason why it can't be duplicated, because to duplicate the Aron means to somehow be vulnerable, that maybe the person, who, as great as that person might be, but maybe there'll be something lacking in the making of the kruvim that comes too close for comfort with Avodah Zarah, and therefore it was only reserved for Bezalel. We have one other minute, and maybe I'll just conclude. It says that the Mizbeach Hazav, and this is this week's parsha, it's Vinasatis Mizbeach Hazav, and you make the Mizbeach Hazav. What did they do on the Mizbeach Hazav? They offered up the daily ketores, the incense, every day, twice a day, and also on Yom Kippur. And where is this Mizbeach placed? Lifnei Aron HaEdes, in front of the Holy Ark. In other words, the Aron HaKadosh was in the Lifnei V'Lifnim. There was a curtain or a wall, depending on which, but in the Mishkan, it was a curtain in front of that. Behind that was the Ohel Moed, and there stood the Mizbeach, the Menorah, and the Shulchan. The Mizbeach stood just opposite, right in front of the Aron HaEdus. And the Mishnah Chachma says, it's interesting, he says, because in other places, Pasuk Chavav, it says that you place the Mizbeach Hazav Lefnei HaParochas, before the curtain. And in Parshas Tetzav, it says that the Mizbeach Hazav should be placed before the curtain. So why in Perek Mem, Pasuk Hei, does it say you place it in front of the Aron HaKodesh? Now, it's true, it's placed in front of the Aron, but at that spot, that just behind the curtain, is the Aron HaKodesh. But why is the emphasis on those two psukim? It's placed in front of the... as far as I'm concerned, it should say the parochah, says the Meshech Chochmah, because if you want to know the immediate place where it is, it's right in front of the parochah. The parochah, okay, in back of the parochah, so you have the Arnaias. So he says something very interesting. He brings the Rambam, and Moran Avuchim says something that other Rishonim argue with, and that he, the Moran Avuchim, wants to give a reason why they brought the Keteris twice a day. He says something so interesting. He says because all the Karbonis were brought there, the animals were slaughtered, the fats were burned, he says, and it doesn't produce a very good smell. He says, in order to then negate the smell of all of the animals that were slaughtered and all those smells that are associated with the slaughtering of animals and the burning of fats and so on and so forth, they had to bring the Keteris. The Keteris was extremely powerful. The Gemara talks about how they smelled the Keteris many miles away, and it would offset the otherwise malodorous Kabbonis that were slaughtered. Okay, now the Rebbeinu Bechai, he argues with the Rambam, but this is the Rambam Mamar Nevuchim. So the Meshech Chachmah wants to say that if it would only say you want to put it, so if you don't, if you learn not like the Rambam, so he says that's why it says it's done in front of the Aron. In other words, it's, yes, the place is in front of the parochas. It's in front of the parochas. But lest you think that the reason why it's there is like the Rambam, to offset the bad smell, therefore at this place it says you put it lifnei Aron ha'edus, that its placement is in front of the Aron, which is the holy place in the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, in order that the Keteris should have the spiritual effect. Its placement has nothing to do with negating bad smells. Its placement has to do with, it's lined up with the Holy of Holies, it's lined up with the Aron HaEdos, and therefore the emphasis is, it's in this one place, put it by the Aron HaEdos to convey the point that its placement is not in front of the parochas in order to negate the smells, but it's placed there because ultimately if you go straight through, you'll get the Aron HaEdos, so we want this holy avoda of the Keteris to be aligned with the otherwise holy avoda or the holy underpinnings of what the Aron HaEdos is with the Luchos HaBris. Okay? Have a wonderful Shabbos, everyone, and we thank you for listening. Yeah.